Kia ora, ko Craig McCullough ho, ane te pūrongo tōranga pū mō tēnei wiki. Welcome to Focus on Politics. It was all going so well. After more than 3 weeks with no new cases of COVID-19, the country had settled into a state of self-congratulation. Then came Tuesday, a nervous tremor building to an earthquake, a crisis of confidence in the quarantine scheme.
We have had a setback in people's confidence. Our job is to restore it.
New Zealanders had been assured the border was watertight. It appears, in fact, it was riddled with holes. On Tuesday at 1 p.m, the Daily Health Update arrived, and with worrying news. 2 new cases of COVID-19. Both cases were connected, the Health Ministry said, both related to the border as a result of recent travel from the United Kingdom. On its own, that's not cause for concern. Cases will continue to pop up at the border as Kiwis return from abroad. It's why the quarantine system is in place. New arrivals should spend at least 14 days in isolation in a government-approved hotel. And starting from early June, they should also all be tested twice during their stay, on day 3 and day 12, and allowed to leave only after a negative result. It's meant to stop COVID-19 at the border, to keep it from spreading into the community. It's meant to. A media conference was called for 3 p.m. on Tuesday, 2 hours after the health update, 2 hours for fear to ferment. By the time it arrived, all eyes were glued on the Director General of Health, Ashley Bloomfield.
So as you heard from our 1 o'clock release, we have had 2 cases. These are 2 women from the same family, one in her 30s, one in her 40s.
The 2 sisters had flown from London via Doha and Brisbane, arriving in Auckland on June the 7th. They were returning home to be with their dying mother and began their 14 days in isolation at the Novotel Auckland Ellerslie. One of the women had a tightness in her chest and shortness of breath, but dismissed it as part of an existing medical condition. On June the 12th, the sisters applied for a compassionate exemption to leave isolation early, but their mother died that night. Health officials moved quickly, it seems too quickly. A plan was agreed for the women to depart on June the 13th. The plan stipulated a car would be dropped off at the hotel by friends. The women would drive directly to Wellington, where they'd meet their father and stay with him. En route, they were to have no contact with others. That was the plan.
They then drove together all the way to Wellington and had no contact with anybody else during that trip.
It didn't take long, though, for that claim to unravel. We'll come back to that later. The plan also agreed the women would get tested for COVID-19 after arriving in Wellington. And on June 15, they did just that. The next day, the results came back positive.
These are Kiwis returning from countries where there is active community spread of COVID-19, and that is why we have the requirement for managed isolation at the border. Everyone that is granted an exemption under compassionate grounds is assumed to present a risk of COVID-19, and all precautions are taken to manage that risk.
But not all precautions were taken. Dr. Bloomfield's matter-of-fact delivery belies the massive blunder at the centre of it all. Not that the women were allowed to leave isolation early, but that they were allowed to leave without first being tested. It was almost as an aside in response to questions from media that Dr. Bloomfield said he'd now insisted that that be mandatory.
What I have asked for from today is that anyone being released for a compassionate exemption is tested and there is a negative test result received and confirmed before they are released.
The big question is why that wasn't happening already. Remember, people are supposed to be tested on day 3 of isolation. The sisters left on day 6 without a test. Yet Dr. Bloomfield seemed remarkably unfazed. His initial statement contained no apology, no expression of disappointment, not even acknowledgement of an error. Meanwhile, the public mood was shifting, a quiet fury building. And by early evening, the government seemed to have cottoned on. The Health Minister, David Clark, told Checkpoint all compassionate exemptions would be halted until he could be confident the proper checks were occurring.
The system clearly has not worked as it was intended to work. I'm very disappointed about that. We're obviously in a good position for tracing this, but we don't want to open up
the
risk.
Yeah, you might be, but that is a fundamental flaw, isn't it? Both you and the Director General of Health sitting there thinking that people are tested before they're granted an exemption. That's not the case. You have infected people travelling the length of the country.
Yeah, absolutely. As I say, it's very good that we know these people were highly compliant. They did the right things. They got tested. We have all the contacts to trace the limited number of people they've come in contact with. But I want assurance that this does not happen again.
And from there, the position only hardened. As the country's anger increased, so too did the government. Later that night on Facebook Live, the Prime Minister, Jacinda Ardern.
That does not meet our expectations, and I know it will not meet your expectations either.
David Clark, the next day on Morning Report.
Things ought to have happened. It seems inexplicable to me.
And the Senior Minister, Stuart Nash, on News Talk ZB.
It is totally unacceptable when 5 million Kiwis do it real tough. We eliminate this stuff. We have rugby games full of people, and then you get this sort of ineptitude? Man, that is unforgivable.
By Wednesday afternoon, the Prime Minister's irritation was obvious.
This case represents an unacceptable failure of the system. It should never have happened, and it cannot be repeated.
But the story was only about to get worse. Less than an hour after the PM made those comments, the National MP, Michael Woodhouse, dropped a bombshell in Parliament, catching the Health Minister off guard during question time.
Has he seen reports that the two individuals went the wrong way on their journey to Wellington and came into close contact with the people who gave them directions?
Mr Speaker, no, I have seen no evidence of that.
Was he aware that the Good Samaritans who assisted them were rewarded with a kiss and a cuddle, and would he consider that to be a close contact?
Mr Speaker, I would be deeply concerned if that were the case. I have been assured that there was no contact on their journey to the place where they visited their relative in the Wellington region.
Mr Woodhouse later told reporters his information came from a reliable and closely connected source.
I'm calling on the Minister to require the Director General to look deeper into the circumstances of that journey and reassure himself that he's got all of the facts.
The pressure was beginning to pile on the government. If the border botch-up was the only one, it would be bad enough. But it seemed to unleash an avalanche of other examples. Reports of repeated blunders. Clips here from TVNZ, News Hub and RNZ.
Our latest cases are far from the only people who have been let out of isolation before getting tested. A week ago, the government said those in isolation would have to return a negative test result before being allowed to leave. But some of those cooped up in hotels say that's not happening.
We asked every single day since we got there if we could have a test. And we were told by the Ministry of Health person who was in the foyer at the hotel that we put in.
A guest at the same hotel as two women who've been confirmed to have COVID-19 says she was only tested for the virus today, despite ministry protocols to the contrary.
On day three, they came over, but again, they said it's only optional.
She's not the only one with concerns. Mal Langsford said this gathering for a child's birthday with passengers from different flights was organised by health officials at Auckland's Waipuna Lodge.
News Hub can reveal more COVID security breaches. One of them involves 10 people leaving quarantine early to attend a burial in Christchurch yesterday.
And that's not all. The Chief Ombudsman, Peter Bosha, found his own staff caught up after they checked into an Auckland hotel during lockdown with plans to carry out a prison visit the next day.
And suddenly in the evening, all these people arrived from overseas to be put into quarantine. We weren't told. So we were all mixed up with everyone else and I was livid. Yeah. I had to cancel the prison visit the next day. I feel that what we should be doing is asking each facility to have a good hard look at what it's doing to make sure that it's workable and proper.
Then, very late on Wednesday night, the Ministry of Health dropped a media release, effectively confirming what Michael Woodhouse had claimed in Parliament. The two sisters had become lost on the Auckland motorway system, it said. They'd phoned friends who'd met them and guided them to the correct motorway. Not the no-contact trip as described. It was time for a please explain from Dr. Bloomfield, who appeared on Morning Report Thursday morning.
When I announced these two cases on Tuesday, I, as I have throughout this whole pandemic, told people all the information I had. Some further information was gleaned by the public health unit in interviewing the women Tuesday evening. They did not deem it material because it was a very fleeting interaction. I found out about it yesterday afternoon and asked for a full update, and there was further discussion, and that's the update I gave last night, that they did. At the time, they were very distraught. They were driving from Auckland to Wellington. They got on the motorway and went north instead of south. The friends met them, set them on the right way, and that was the nature of that interaction. They then drove from Auckland to Wellington.
As for the claims of a kiss and a cuddle...
Look, can I just say there were not hugs and kisses. What I can say is that there was a very fleeting arm put around the women to provide comfort, and this was so fleeting that actually the women themselves, who were very distressed at the time, did not recall that happening.
Dr. Bloomfield held a media conference later that day and struck a very different tone from his first appearance. He took responsibility, he said, for the error.
I've certainly been upset by it, and I apologise that we've ended up in this position. I've taken responsibility to make sure that the system is sorted.
By now, it was clear some action was needed. Someone needed to be held to account. Nationals leader Todd Muller demanded the Health Minister's head.
He is the Minister. He sets the tone around how serious this is. This is a national crisis for this country. We are heading into the largest economic crisis we've seen in a generation. The impact on families is severe. We've endured so much as a country. We've had people not being able to be there when their loved ones have died, when loved ones are born. We've endured an enormous amount, and he is accountable as Minister of Health to make sure the protocols are followed every day, all day, without exception.
But David Clark was digging in.
Ministers were clearly under the understanding that this was not going to happen, that people would be being tested before they left the facility and only be allowed to leave if they received a negative test. I am a part of fixing of the problem.
And he had the PM behind him.
The minister is in exactly the same position that I am. We both find what has happened here unacceptable. It is counter to what we were told was happening at the border. Our job is to fix the situation.
But exactly how were they planning to fix it? On Wednesday, Ms Ardern announced the military was being brought in. The Assistant Chief of Defence, Air Commodore Digby Webb, would be put in charge of operating all quarantine and isolation facilities, she said. And he'd begin by carrying out a complete audit of the systems and protocols.
My view is we need the rigour, we need the confidence, and that we need the discipline that the military can provide in what is a significant logistical exercise. Bringing them in will give added confidence to ministers, but I hope also the public.
But the promise of a defence force swooping to the rescue soon became muddied. It was known the military had already been closely involved in the quarantine efforts. Indeed, Air Commodore Webb had been in a key role for some time.
In breaking news, it's been revealed the military official who was yesterday announced as the new head of our border controls has in fact been in charge of isolation facilities and repatriation for at least the past month.
After much confusion, it was later confirmed Air Commodore Webb's role had been expanded to now include the health side of quarantine, namely testing and exemptions. Still, hardly a new broom. On Friday, another shake-up was announced. The housing minister this time would be parachuted in to save the day. Megan Woods has been given ministerial oversight of the facilities. And she, along with Air Commodore Webb, fronted to media on Friday a stern-faced commitment to putting the situation right.
We cannot give up our privileged position of having some of the most liberal settings and open economies in the middle of a global pandemic without a fight.
My role's been clear from the Prime Minister, and that is to come on board this team and fix it going forward. So I'm definitely looking into the future. We know we can do things better, and that's exactly what we're going to do.
The two have set a new plan in motion. The military presence on the ground has been doubled. Another 36 defence staff flown in to be stationed at hotels, and more police officers too. The testing regime has been bolstered with an assurance no one can leave quarantine without a negative test. Eventually, the Ministry of Business, Innovation and Employment will take over the operation from Health. Megan Woods says that's why she's been brought in. She'll help manage the transition. That said, it certainly doesn't look like a vote of confidence in the Health Minister David Clark.
This is about, as you do after any disaster, the transition away from the immediate response to what the longer term looks like. After any disaster, you stand things up quickly. The most logical agency at that point was health to have responsibility there. It is now time to transfer that responsibility.
The Prime Minister will be desperately hoping the responsibility reshuffle begins to restore confidence in the country's border controls. And with an election looming, she'll be more aware of that than ever. For a while now, Labour has looked a safe bet to lead the next government. The Prime Minister lauded for her initial handling of the COVID-19 crisis. Even the opposition called it overall impressive. But perception is everything, and it doesn't take long for impressive to turn into shambolic and incompetent. The so-called team of 5 million had rewarded Labour in the polls, but it can just as easily punish it. That's Focus on Politics. I'm Craig McCulloch. Thanks for joining us. If you'd like to listen to this program again, head to rnz.co.nz/focusonpolitics. Mā te wā.